Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we've redefined what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Inclusive Collective, where we share stories and learnings of inclusive people, organization, and innovation. I'm your co-host, Rob Hadley, a people and culture strategist specializing in DE&I and people analytics. I'm here with my friend, Nadia Butt, an organizational development and belonging strategist. Nadia, welcome to another week of Inclusive Collective. How you doing?
Another week, Rob. I'm well. How are you this week?
Just pounding them out. Just like factory, you know? Boom, boom, boom.
We are.
You doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Traveling a bit, but I'm all right.
Yeah, that was good. That was what I was going to check on with you. How are you doing? How are you holding up this holiday season? Like, we're kind of fully in the grips. You're traveling. Mm-hmm. You're still working on your PhD.
Yeah.
You're working. How you do it? Right? The world's going to hell. Like, how you doing?
I think it's the world that's going to hell. I'm not well. So I just have to laugh through it all. I'm literally like in my brother's, you know, kind of like the guest room that has, as you can see, like diapers in the back and like just kind of making it.
I was wondering if those were towels. Those are towels. Those are actual diapers.
Those are diapers.
Those are diapers.
Yeah, those are diapers.
Well, I like your background. Listen,
I could have people have it far worse than me.
Right.
I feel really lucky and privileged to be able to travel to visit family, visit friends. My doctorate's suffering right now. Because I'm not writing on working on my dissertation, but it's been really good. You know, holidays is all about family, friends, loved ones, and December reminds me of that. And so it has been nice to see. I saw a friend that I've been seeing since prior to the pandemic, spent a lot of time with her. So it's been wonderful.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling someone the other day that I'm spread so thin that I'm disappointing everyone. So that... It makes it so there's no discrimination, right? Like no one's happy with
all
me right
one,
now.
Yeah, all and for so, one for all.
So sure. That gives me a little comfort. Well, let's spend a little joy today. What do we got today, Nadia?
Well, this week on Inclusive Collective, we will be talking to Charlotte Young Bowens, founder and CEO of Conscious Gear, about her unexpected journey from administrator to startup founder. We'll also highlight Johnson & Johnson's expansion of bereavement leave and about the social determinants of work. And later, we'll double rave.
Double rave. Let's do double rave today.
But first, let's get to the deep. So bereavement.
Bereavement. Yeah. Bereavement. Tell me about bereavement. What's going on?
So I saw this article in the Financial Post, and it was around a company's bereavement policy. And I just thought it was really interesting. So essentially, it was about the company J&J, Johnson & Johnson, and how one of their employees was seeking time to recover from the death of his son. And the policy at the time had stated that bereavement for folks would be 5 days.
Yep.
So this employee then messaged senior management, and his plea turned out to be a key factor in the decision to increase bereavement leave from 5 days, which is actually the average across corporate America, to 30 days. So let me pause there for your reaction.
Well, yeah, and I think that that's even probably high. I mean, I think that when I've used bereavement in the past, and I think my company's policies were like in the two to three day range. So I think it's actually probably improved a little bit. Really cool story about employee listening, right? So there's a lot of things like this that don't make sense from a human perspective in terms of corporate policy. And employees don't raise them. We don't raise them because we don't think anyone will listen, right? And so this person made a, it was like, wait, I need more than 5 days. I think this person's spouse had passed.
Well, this person in the article? No, it was his son.
Oh, his son. Yeah, his son passed. And they're like, I require as a human being more than 5 days, right? And so Johnson & Johnson, to its credit, listened. And then the spokesman said they had overwhelmingly positive reaction from the rest of the company as well. And so, you know, all of these policies and practices, they need to be looked at. There's real opportunities to tell your employees that you care about them as people, and in addition to the work that they do for you. So I think J&J just really earned a lot of goodwill from this. You know, and then there was also a piece around expanding the notion of family as well, right? And to be more inclusive, and the definition of bereavement, right? So my thoughts went to, you know, how do we think about miscarriage, right? Like is that covered? Is that covered for the father? So there's just a real ton of opportunities in these policies to show people that you actually care about those people.
I love that. Yeah, this article, I mean, it didn't go into detail. It was worth a read. It was a quick read. What I will say, though, I never actually thought about the bereavement for, like, if you have a miscarriage, or for not just for the person experiencing it, but also the spouse or the partner.
Yeah.
So thank you for, you know, even including that, those folks. I looked at it from like a cultural perspective, because when I had to take bereavement, you know, depending on how you might observe, many Muslims take like 3 days. I think that's also in the Judaic religion. Mm-hmm. And then we follow up with like a 40-day and then a 1 year, really, to kind of honor the person that has passed, or even the people around, the supporting people that might need bereavement. But it's really interesting. So I think, like, like you said, what I took away from it was the listening from the employees and kind of their needs and what they're hoping to kind of get out of the policy and how things have shifted, right? Like, when these policies are written, they're probably written decades ago, and maybe right. 5 days was like just enough. And so I think what I would encourage employers, HR folks to be open to is listening to their employees if certain policies or practices are just not enough time, particularly in the bereavement policy place.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, that's a great example. And I think this next story also fits with this idea of just thinking about what employees need in order to do well and be in their role, right? To feel like they belong inside an organization. So this comes from HR Dive's DEI newsletter this past week. Nadia, do you like the HR Dive?
I love the HR Dive.
Great job. I love the HR Dive. The article details how companies are starting to think about the social determinants of work. Oh, so similar to how healthcare providers think through the social determinants of health. The article profiles efforts Aflac, Norwell Health, and the United Way of Cleveland. Aflac, for example, focuses on 5 dimensions of employee wellness: physical, emotional, financial, spiritual, and social, and then tries to align their programs and support in those areas throughout the employee lifecycle. And so, what did you enjoy from some of these companies' examples?
So the first thing was, like, it was really cool, the framework that they provided, that Aflac kind of used, because it reminded me, I don't know if it reminded you of this, but about a year ago, we had shared the framework that the U.S. Surgeon General created that centers, like, the worker's voice and equity and well-being. Mm. And it had also 5 elements that was worth that's worth folks looking into as well. I thought that was really interesting. But I did really enjoy reading this article because it brought to light how, like, the needs of employees are starting to shift, right? Mm-hmm. Similarly to what we just said earlier on with the bereavement policy. Like, I think of my parents' generations, and that a generation that's like the baby boomers, and the benefits that they were most concerned with involved, like, healthcare security, so like things like medical, dental, life, you know, vision, then life insurance, and of course retirement security. And I think those are still things that folks are still seeking, but as time has progressed, I think the workforce needs have shifted, and folks are seeking additional needs from their employers that address their well-being in and out of the workplace. And it's interesting because earlier in my doctoral research, I had done some research on employee engagement outcomes, and the research really does correlate with productivity, health outcomes, business growth, impacts on absenteeism, employee safety, and of course, employee turnover. So, you know, of course, there's like so many there's several studies out there that have found that I'll pause here because I want your reaction. Then I want to add something that I thought was interesting in some of the research that I had done.
Yeah. And I think that's where I was going as well, right? So there's within these models of engagement, right? So many of them, you can love your job, you can love your company, you can love your team, but if your social needs are not being met outside of work, then how much can you really engage, right? You can't right. necessarily be your most productive and effective self at work. And so then, of course, the social determinants of work, like the social determinants of health, are disproportionately stacked against those in non-dominant groups as well. Is one of the things that I had thought about. Mm. So those, you know, and obviously dominant groups are white men often, right? And in larger often. Companies. So really smart companies are doing this. And then the article points out all of the returns that these companies get from taking this type of approach. And so it's just overwhelmingly positive in terms of the return that they're getting on the investment, again, in showing people that you're actually thinking of them outside of work as people.
Yeah. So I know that this is not like a prediction episode where we're predicting like next year, but I also just want folks to consider when we talk about well-being is that there are several studies that where the interesting variable is with manager, especially those frontline facing managers, where the most important factor in employee engagement and performance, because they best position themselves to not only navigate like the organizational changes that are occurring, but they're closest to the day-to-day of the employee. They really do have better insight into an employee's overall well-being.
Yep.
So that's why I think that one of the, of course, manager mechanisms that we advocate for is to have those frequent and meaningful check-ins and feedback conversations. Those are so critical to employee well-being. And so I am curious as to what next year reveals in terms of management kind of interactions with employees and how that will drive DE&I as well as well-being in the workplace.
I think the plan for next year is to go all AI robots for managers, right?
Sure.
I think that's where we're headed.
Oh,
that won't work, you're telling me?
Maybe. You never know.
All right. We'll see what happens. All right. Well, thanks for that, Nadia. That's it for the deets this week. We'll be right back with Charlotte Young-Bowens of Conscious Gear. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Inclusive Collective. Our guest today is Charlotte Young-Bowens. Charlotte is the founder of Conscious Gear and a trailblazing innovator behind the Vesta Pack, the world's first plus-size hydration vest. She is a university administrator turned entrepreneur who was motivated by a personal health scare. Charlotte has made it her mission to use a design aesthetic that is centered on taller, curvier, and bigger bodies to create outerwear and outdoor gear with input from the consumer she hopes to serve. Charlotte's first product, the Vesta Pack, is the world's first ultralight hydration vest designed by and for bigger bodies. In October 2023, USA Today nominated Vesta Pack as one of the top 10 Readers' Choice Award products. A longtime outdoor enthusiast and ultramarathoner from Ann Arbor, Michigan, she currently resides in Tempe, Arizona, where she works as an administrator at Arizona State University. And while it's true that she is totally committed to building her company, she does hope to get back to doing her real love of ultra marathons, triathlons, and other CrossFit events in the not so distant future. Charlotte Young-Bowens, it's great to see you again. Welcome to Inclusive Collective.
Great to see you too, Rob. Thank you guys so much. First and foremost, thank you so much for inviting me and having me as part of your podcast community. I'm super excited to connect and share and learn. So thank you. Happy Friday, everybody.
Oh, happy Friday, Charlotte. So great to meet you. Thank you so much for joining us on Inclusive Collective this week. I want to hear about your background. I'm always so really like thrilled to learn about people's backgrounds, their identity, and what led them to where they are. So tell us more about your background. What led you to Conscious Gear? And then tell us a little bit too around what led you to your first product, the Vesta Pack.
So I think in terms of my background, as mentioned, I was born and raised in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I was a Girl Scout growing up and loved camping.
Oh my God, me too.
In fact, my troop leader, I used to want to always go camping. I'm, And I would say, well, how can we go on more Kemi trips? And my chief leader was like, well, so you got to raise more money, which means you got to sell more cookies.
Yeah.
So for 2 years straight, I was I sell the most cookies in the state of Michigan. I don't know if my mother has forgiven me because our house, our garage, our basement, every room in the house was full of cookies. That sold thousands. And because I wanted to go camping. But then after that, you know, you grow out of Girl Scouts, you grow up, you have a life. I was a single mom. I had 3 kids. Really kind of found myself just floundering really in life, trying to figure out what I really wanted to do. In hindsight, I just feel like I just never did have the support that I needed, which culminated in me having a health scare. I landed in an emergency room. Doctor's like, by the time I left out, he's like, look, you got high blood pressure, high cholesterol, you're borderline diabetic, you're morbidly obese, you're clinically depressed. And I think in many respects, that was a wake-up call for me because I thought my depression had led me to think that I really wanted to die. But in that moment, I realized, no, that's not exactly what I want to do. And so it shook me. And I said, I got to do better. And I got to figure it out. And I tell people I did the only thing I knew to do, which was go to the gym, which I had never done in my whole entire life. I'm 46 at the time, 47. And so that's just the way it was. And I tell people, I went to the gym, and on that first day, God sent me an angel. This guy at the gym taught me how to use a treadmill. And we discovered that I could go for 2 minutes at 2 miles per hour. And I think the blessing was when he said, good job, I'll come back tomorrow and do it again. And I think in that non-judgmental moment, first of all, just tell me I did a good job, because I probably nobody had told me that in a long time. It really sank into me. But as I walked out the door, he said, but just know you'll go faster and you'll go for longer. And for me, I was like 2 minutes at 2 miles per hour. I was in beast mode. I was like, like I didn't have to, comparison point. So that's a good job. So I was like, okay, I'm doing it. You know, I would learn when I go told everybody the next day that I did 2 minutes at 2 miles per hour. They were like,
I mean, it's a record. I love it.
But, you know, I tell people I kept putting 1 foot in front of the other. You know, the treadmill went from walking to running outdoors to trail running. I did a 5K, then a 10K. And at a 10K, this woman told me, she said, well, if you can do a 5K, you can do a 10K. If you do a 10K, you can do a half marathon. Do a half marathon, you can do a marathon. Now, why was I listening to her? I don't know why. Once again, somebody's thinking something into me. And I was just discovered like 16 months later, I would be crossing the finish line on my first 50-mile ultra marathon, something I had really never imagined myself doing ever. So it was a really powerful moment for me. And I tell people I remember that race distinctly because at the 48-mile marker, I knew I only had 2 miles to go. And I knew in that moment I could do those 2 miles. Like I was really going to finish this. And I cried like a baby as I thought about, I was 48 years old, about to finish my first 50-mile ultra marathon. Although 16 months earlier, I thought I was about to die. And so I could be anywhere. You know what I mean? Anything could be going on for me. But in that moment, I was about to do something really spectacular, something that was life-changing, something that I had never even thought. I mean, I barely knew I didn't even know what ultra marathon was 4 months before my first one. So, and I said that was for white people, and I definitely was going to do that. you know, it's only white people do that real crazy stuff.
Real crazy stuff.
But there I was.
When you were saying, I can't explain when you were talking it. About like, the 5K to the 10K to that, I was like, that's crazy talk in my mind.
I just feel like the universe was always giving me messages to say, I'm going to show you something. You know what I mean? Like, just know. We'll go for faster. You will go. Like that guy didn't know I would go for faster. He did not know I would really go for longer. He didn't know I was going to do an ultra marathon. He probably thought, oh, she'll get up to a couple miles. But, you know, but what he seeded in me was something really spectacular. However, the journey was bittersweet because as much as I loved outdoors and doing all these endurance events, I struggled with outdoor gear. The stuff that I wore left chafing and rug burns. That was painful and sometimes bloody. But I wanted longevity in this. This was keeping me alive. I really loved it. And so I thought, so this was like 2014, 15. I thought, oh, The big brands will realize I'm out here and I need some gear. So I'm going to give them a minute. I'm going to give them a minute.
Yeah, right.
And it was during the pandemic that I realized, oh, that's like 5 years later. Like, y'all really not going to give me no gear. Like, I'm not going to do it. And so I was like, you know, maybe this is the moment where I get to do the work then. And I think it feels good to do the work because I know that what that work means, because I am my own customer, right? And I love this work. And every time somebody put on my product, it just brings tears and joys to me because I know that feeling. I know that feeling of being putting on a piece of gear that finally fits your body. Like, what? Yeah. Especially when you're in a bigger body and you've been in a bigger body your whole entire life. So that's what really led me. And honestly, I said to myself, oh God, it was so funny. I said, oh, I'm going to try this, but I'm not really. Like, I just really didn't think nothing about it. Like, I will try.
Yeah.
And I tell you, just the universe really always conspires when you try, right? So I was part of, moved to Tempe, working at Arizona State University. They have an entrepreneurial program. I go pitch. Mm-hmm. They give me $10,000. I was like, what? You mean what? This? And I remember when I called my name and I was in the audience, the guy next to me was like, is that you?
Already? That's you.
I was like, oh, that was me. Oh, so, and then City of Tempe, as I mentioned earlier, gave me $20,000, REI, got in their Embark program, which came from another $10,000. And I just felt like, wow, I must be on to something. More than one person besides me agrees.
Has that continued, Charlotte? So I know that, you know, so you got those grants, they've gotten you started. Yeah. Now you're trying to, you know, you have product. Yeah. You didn't talk about the Vesta pack they designed as well. But now you're trying to scale, right? So now you continue to go meet with investors. And just similar to the way that those companies maybe missed or weren't creating product for, you know, your customers and you, how are investors now as you continue to go to try to raise money to scale? Do they get the concept? Are they understanding what the need is?
I think in terms of dealing with investors, that has been one of my pain points. They don't get it. And what I'm realizing that we really do live in a society that's fatphobic. And so we don't really, we think, this is the number one thing people say to me in an investment meeting. And it makes me, I'm not a violent person, but it makes me want to be violent. But anyways, just kidding. Yeah. Is there enough fat people out there to buy this?
Oh, wow. People have said that to
after you. I've told them my story. Like, really? You're going to ask me that question?
Right.
So I don't think they really get it. I don't think they see the potential for it to scale. Although the outdoor industry did come out with a report just this year that there is a plus size outdoor gear and apparel market. It's worth $2 billion. It's growing like breakneck speed of 47% between now and 2027. So what are you guys talking about? So I think what's going to happen is just a smaller brand are just going to have to be the trailblazers for the ones that are going to just have to do it. And then in 2030, they will all catch on. So and that's cool. I mean, and I don't mind bootstrapping. I feel like, you know, it's nice help, but I'm cool with bootstrapping because I believe in this and I believe that, you know, God will always conspire to give me everything that I need to continue to grow, scale, and be successful. So,
So you had mentioned like there's a need for it. So we're seeing folks that are plus size, bigger, kind of wanting to be outdoors or needing more products to help them, whether it's through fitness or just you know, being outdoors more. Is that the case for other kind of demographic groups? So when I kind of consider like my group of friends, brown and black folks don't necessarily prioritize going outdoors as much. Like, I think that we are now definitely, I have a hiking club.
I want to say that we are outside.
But I feel like growing up, it was very rare for like my parents to be like, let's go hiking. Like that just wasn't a thing. Do you feel like that landscape of representation, including plus size and maybe other racial demographics is changing? And how do you think it's changed? And what needs do you think those folks might need?
I definitely feel like the landscape is changing. More people of color are getting in the outdoors. But what I'm learning from the very first day when I said, oh, I'm making a hydration vest, the number one thing I had to do is educate. Did nobody know what a hydration vest was? Mm-hmm. Like even just 70% of the population don't know what it is. They're like, oh, is that that Camelback thing? But
yeah,
I'm a sort of. Hopefully y'all start calling it conscious year thing, but okay, we'll call it Camelback
for now. Yeah.
The Vestapack.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, I think things are changing. I think it's an education. When I think about people of color and other, even different abilities, queer mm-hmm. folk, differently abled, being in these spaces, the outdoor industry has, I can't do it alone, but the outdoor industry has to collectively come together and start welcoming people. Again, the research mm-hmm. is bearing it out. Newcomers, diverse groups of people are coming to the outdoors and right. we're spending mm-hmm. money. So they're going to have to wake up because we're your consumers. And you know, we're not going to really deal with that for too long. And then we're not going to just not come. So I see things potentially changing. I don't know how fast outdoor industry is going to really respond. But there's a lot of potential to make money, but also just provide people with what they need. I always tell people, you know, look, I was weighing almost 400 pounds. And I always use this phrase, I got off my fat ass and I decided to change my life. Why should gear interfere with me being able to reach my goals and be able to be physically active and be able to do the things that I want to do? It's not fair, mm-hmm. you know, it's not. So
I know that, you know, you've created this product that I'm, you know, specifically talking about the Vestapack, building that product, you know, very intentionally designing it for bigger bodied folks. And I know you could talk about some of the steps that you've taken to make sure that you're building something that works for your intended audience and your intended customer. But also, have others responded in ways that you didn't anticipate? Have others said, that's an interesting product for me in ways that you maybe didn't anticipate?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. So many ways. This is the way I'll explain it. When I first started making this product, I thought, I'm just making it for my fellow fat trail runners, right? Okay, that's it. Mm-hmm. But as I talked about the product, I was seeing that there are so many other case uses for this product. Ooh. For instance, my son's a gamer. And I said, I don't make things for gamers. But then he's my kid. So I was like, okay, if you want one, I'll make you one. And then he showed it to his friends, and his friends are like, yeah, we want one too. And I was like, what? And then just people with limited mobility, seeing this for walking groups. Absolutely. Like, what? I think the outdoor industry has really streamline its narrative around what these products can do for people, but it really is can be used for a little bit of any and everybody. You know, people wear this mm-hmm. when they go gardening, people wear this when they go to festivals, people wear this when they go on cruise ships. People come to me and say, I went skiing with this. Or one of mm-hmm. the other demographics that's coming to the fore, and they're the ones that are spending the most money with the brand, is just bulky men. They're not fat per se. Mm-hmm. Plus size. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're just muscular and none of the other stuff that the brands are making fit them. And so all of a sudden Vestapack does, you know? And so that's been a nice surprise to discover, I'm meeting the needs of another segment of society. So I think as a result of that, you know, we are pivoting to say wearable hydration for the masses, right? Because this can't mm-hmm. just be for outdoorsy people. Every time people say that, like, is this for hiking? I'm like, no, girls, this is for you go work out at the gym, wherever you go walking. Like, I don't want people to, that narrative, I got to strip away at that narrative so people can see, this is for mm-hmm. me too. Right. Yeah.
I love that there's like this focus, of course, on inclusivity and then, of course, accessibility, which is so great. You had mentioned that you really didn't expect yourself to be an entrepreneur or a founder of this company. I'm curious, like, what have you loved about this journey that you've been on? What has surprised you thus far about yourself?
I think everything has surprised me. But I think, so this is what happens. Like, I'm on this journey, right? I don't know nothing about nothing. And then at every, we'll just call it milestone, I'm discovering something new about myself. And what I get to say to myself is, this is just mile 27. of the 50-mile ultimate. Like, remember what it felt like at mile 27? Remember what it felt like at mile 35? Remember, you know what I mean? Like, it, and I have to remind, it always tells me, you got through, you know, your 50-mile race, then you can get through this entrepreneurial race. It's the same dynamics. You have the same capacity to do the things that you need to do to get to the finish line. And so that's what I love that. I love that I get to always look back on that, on my ultramarathoning and my motivation.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Charlotte Young Bowens. It's great to see you again. We wish you the best in your journey. And come back and see us here on Inclusive Collective.
Charlotte, come back and see us.
This has been too short.
Thank you so much.
This has been too short. Yeah. All right. We'll be right back with more Inclusive Collective right after this.
Welcome back, folks. We just wrapped our conversation with Charlotte Young Bowens. Rob, what a wonderful and inspiring story. I feel like Charlotte had so much to share of her personal journey. I particularly was inspired. What about you?
So many nuggets, so many little things that I thought there was just almost like a manual for founders in terms of a lot of great little tips and tricks there.
Yeah. I wish we had asked her what her favorite trail in state and out of state was. So we'll have to bring her back on and ask her that.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping to hang out with her here, and I'm hoping maybe she'll take me on a hike or a run in Utah at some point.
That would crush you, I think.
There's no way I could keep up with it. Zero percent chance at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Ultra marathoner.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I think it's that time now here for Raves and Rants. And I think we're double raving today, right?
We're like almost triple raving. So why don't you get us started?
I'll start, Nadia. Yeah. So the good people of Ireland will vote early next year to decide whether sexist language in the Irish Constitution should be removed. So I read this article in Politico. I thought it was interesting. One section in the Constitution in question argues that women should be in the home for the good of the country. So an amendment would place value, of course, on all family caregivers. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So there's a vote for that on March 8th, and we'll follow up when that happens.
Yeah, hopefully that goes the right way. All right. Excellent.
Because if it doesn't, it's a rant.
Yeah, I can't imagine, but you never know, right? So, all right. So, and then I also wanted to call attention to our Inclusive Collective gift guide, our newsletter. So be sure to check that out. Lots of great, we highlighted some of the guests that we've had, including Charlotte Young Bowens, we just talked to. We highlighted, before even having her on the program, we had highlighted that as a potential gift for the holiday season, and then also other gift guides for folks that are minoritized in some way as well, and entrepreneurs from various backgrounds as well. So check that out. And then, you know, the last thing is I looked up to, and I guess I hadn't even realized it, but we're in the throes of the holiday season, and some of us are actually in their holiday. So happy Hanukkah to our friends that are celebrating right now as well. And I hope you have a joyous time of year.
That's great. Yeah. Happy Hanukkah to those observing and celebrating. Well, folks, that's it for Inclusive Collective. We thank Charlotte for joining us this week. Just a reminder that if you're looking for DE&I and workplace culture strategy consulting, problem solving, or training, you can reach out to me at Nadia@nazconsultants.com and Rob@takanaconsulting.com. Inclusive Collective is a production of Aphelion Media and edited by Ari Mathay. We would love to hear from you folks, so please send us your feedback at inclusivecollective@aphelion.com. Please follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Please be sure to subscribe to our Inclusive Collective newsletter, especially this past one, like Rob said, was really cool with some tips. If you like what you heard, please be sure to subscribe and rate. We love 5 stars. Thanks again, and folks, we'll see you next week. Be well.
Bye, Nadia.